To the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard the title cut from a brand new album from my guest today. You just heard All New. My guest today, coming back for the second time, is Kathy Fink. The album All New is Kathy Fink and Tom Paxton.
And Marcy CDs. Marxer.
And Marcy, I knew I heard Marcy's voice there. I didn't mean to let her. Last time Kathy was the show, it was Kathy and Marcy, and we were talking about an album and got in a lot of their history, so that you know all that already, where they came from and why they're in music and what they're doing. I'll just remind people that Kathy Fink, to me, is one of the most relentless folk singers I've ever come across. Kathy Fink writes and performs the great classic folk songs. She does songs about big issues. She does song about very intimate issues and friendship. And it's just, to me, Kathy, you are the ultimate living folk song person that I know.
Well, that's about the hugest compliment I'm going to get today. So thank you, Steve. And no worries. You know, it's an interesting project because all the songs were written by Tom Paxton and myself, but then we performed them with Tom and the Kathy Marcy duo, plus an awesome backup band with Kimber Ludeker from Delamay playing fiddle and singing harmony and playing some great mandolin. And then Alex Lacamont, who plays with Charm City Bluegrass and tons of bands. He's a Baltimore bass player. And then Alex on one song also plays killer harmonica. So it's the performance is really the trio, but the songs were all written by Tom and myself.
And this audience knows, and they can always go back and review that extended. We did a two-part show, Kathy, you and Marcy and I. They can always go back and recheck that on the archives of Unreal Bluegrass. But so they know who you are. They've heard my introduction if you were going to get into this album. But just in case they don't know Tom Paxton, tell us a little bit about Tom Paxton, why you recorded with him, and just let them know a little bit about him.
Well, Tom is a folk music icon if there ever was one. You know, in the 60s, he started writing songs. His first big song that everybody's heard is The Marvelous Toy, which back in the 60s was a pop hit for so many different bands. But he's got so many classics. Here's to You, My Ramblin' Boy, The Last Thing on My Mind. Tom is a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award winner. He's gotten awards from the BBC, from ASCAP, from the Folk Alliance. He is a songwriter's songwriter, and he's also a great humanist. And the only other person I use that word with a lot is Ola Bell Reed. But Tom is, he is dedicated to songwriting. He's got over 65 albums out. His songs have been recorded by everyone from Willie Nelson to the first recording of The Last Thing on My Mind, I think, or at least the first country recording was Dolly Parton and her famous partner, Porter Wagoner. And Tom still goes back to that recording on YouTube and just loves it to pieces. So then you've got, you know, Placido Domingo recording his songs, Johnny Cash recording his songs.
Can you imagine having that much appeal to fit so many? I'm not a big fan of describing a genre that somehow limits either the audience or the artist, and I have to have some description of it. But can you imagine having that appeal that you've just described for Tom Paxton, to where people comfortably record his songs and play his music? That's just amazing.
So my story with Tom goes back to 1977, when a former partner in the bluegrass world with me, a guy by the name of Duck Donald, and I were performing at the Philly Folk Festival. And we finished our main stage set. I was in my mid-20s. And at the end of the show, we came down the very, very steep stairs from the stage. And at the bottom of the stairs was Tom Paxton, his wife Midge, and his two little girls. And Tom smiled, and he held out his hand, and he said, "I loved your music. I'm Tom Paxton. I want you to meet my family." Well, you know, since that time, we've been friends. And we'd run across each other at folk festivals. We'd run across each other doing different things. From time to time, we'd be in the same place at the same time. We wrote a few songs together. We became good friends. Tom took Marcy and I on tour with him in 2003 in the UK, where he maintained a huge audience and still does, because he lived in London for a couple of years and did the whole folk circuit over there. In 2003, we did 10 shows together. I plugged a mini disc machine into the board every night, and the last two nights were perfect shows. And I edited those. We put them out as an album called Live in the UK, and it got a Grammy nomination. Then Marcy and I have produced several of Tom's albums and played on them and worked together with him. And when the pandemic hit, right before the pandemic, interestingly enough, just as pals, Tom and his girlfriend Peg and Marcy and I took a little 10-day vacation in San Miguel in Mexico. I have a cousin who lives there part-time, and she invited us all down, and we all went on vacation. And while we were there, Tom and Marcy and I did a benefit concert for an organization that helps immigrants and the traveling immigrants, and it was a sold-out show for 500 people. It was crazy. And we came back from the pandemic. I mean, we came back from Mexico. The pandemic hit, and we were all stranded at home for the next 2 years. And Tom took this opportunity to set up co-writing sessions, regular co-writing sessions with a number of people. And I was one of those people. We had started regularly writing together before we went to Mexico. We had two great songs that we really loved. Two of them are on this album. One of them is called Dreams of Home, and the other is The Pearl of Arizona, about a female outlaw of the West. You know, Tom came over one day and he said, "What are we going to write about?" I said, "Well, I was just researching female outlaws of the West. There's this woman named Pearl Hart." And he immediately said, "The Pearl of Arizona," and off we go. So we kept a regular Wednesday 10 a.m. Zoom co-writing date. And if either of us had to do something, couldn't be there, you know, we would reschedule it, et cetera. But we kept that date, and we probably wrote, over the course of that time, 45 songs or so. We're still keeping that date whenever available. And, in fact, since we finished this album, we've written about four more songs that we really like. We've written some songs that we'll probably never sing. That's the process. So that's kind of the seeds of this project. And then we were sitting there with all of these songs, and I said, "Well, what the hey? We have all these great songs. Let's record them." And then we're trying to figure out, how are we going to record them? And of course, in today's music industry, putting out a record is like one of the weirdest things you can do. But we had a nice window in January where things were calming down a bit with the pandemic. We went into a beautiful local studio called Tonal Park, run by our friend Charlie Pilzer. We had a live audience of about 20 people, vaccinated and masked. We did two nights in a row, and the second night we did as a live stream. And it was a live concert. The live stream had 500 people in it, and there were still 20 people in the audience. So it all felt real, and it all felt live, and it all felt fun. And we had spent the month rehearsing a couple times a week with Kimber and with Alex. And we just went for it. We went for the fun. And, of course, while we're in a live stream, I'm paying attention to the band, and I'm paying attention to Tom, and I'm paying attention to the live stream people. And so I'm all over the place on and off mic. It's still really fun. But we went back in the studio and re-recorded some things so that they would sound very consistent. And we had a great time. And one of the things that I love about this project is there are so many different styles on it. I'm going to say there's no straight-ahead bluegrass, because I'm never playing three-finger style banjo. But there's some hard-driving bluegrass on here between the clawhammer banjo, the mandolin, the fiddle, the harmonies. And the other thing is that when we sit down to write songs, sometimes we sit in tension and a purpose. So some of my favorite songs came from that. One of them, When the Big Bad Books Go Boo. You know, I'm a news junkie, and all of this stuff about banning books was going on, and I was pissed off. Well,
I have a note by that song, by the way, so you're taking me right where I wanted to go. You know me too well, or I know you too well, or we both think alike, but go ahead.
You know, so I said that to Tom. You know, I was just, it was driving me nuts, this book banning, because what's next? You know, book ban, this is 1984 come true or something. So we wrote that song. Honestly, we didn't know if it had legs, but we liked it. And, you know, in our position where we never think we're going to get a hit, where we're not writing songs for that purpose, we're writing songs for ourselves. And when we think that they also have value to others, then we're going to sing them out loud. Mm-hmm. And we made a video with this song. We put it out there. We're still getting it out to libraries. We're getting lots of feedback on it. And that's one of the centerpieces of Tom's songwriting that I've always appreciated, is his ability to write about current events and to do it with every emotion available. Some of those songs will be humorous and ridiculous. Some of those songs will be extremely serious. So, you know, one of our purposes is always to speak to modern times. We sat down and wrote with another purpose quite frequently. We were both very interested in contributing to what we call the community song songbook. And to be perfectly honest, in our minds, what that means is every Unitarian church wants these songs for their services. Songs that everybody can sing. They have no controversy, but they speak to the important things in life. Songs like The Freedom of Forgiving, or the song that we wrote called Grateful, which was really in honor of our dear friend Grace Griffith, who passed away just about a year ago. And Grace was a beautiful songbird. She's also the reason, or one of the important reasons, why the world got to hear Eva Cassidy. And that's its own story.
Wow, okay.
But Grace had Parkinson's disease. Marcy and I were on her caregiving team for 15 years. She passed away. And, you know, when you sit down with an intention like, how do we write a song in honor of Grace? It almost feels too big. It almost feels too hard. And I think that's where Tom really knows how to help turn a song. Then one day he calls me up and he goes, I was on my walk today and I had this funny line, Grandpa danced the Charleston at the age of 82. And again, it seems like Mission Impossible, but we had a blast. And that's where all these different styles of music come in. Sometimes we said, we're going to write a bluegrass song today. There's no question that Rust on the Hills is a bluegrass song.
Yes.
It's a classic bluegrass song.
We're getting back to normal. I in my mind, it's the last cut that I have on the CD is a swing. It's like a Western swing.
Getting back to normal definitely brought in Kathy and Marcy's love of yodeling, of Western swing, of Patsy Montana, of Riders in the Sky. And I think one of the things that makes our collaboration really work is that Tom loves applying all these different styles to the music that we write. So we might write a straight ahead folk song, we might write a straight ahead bluegrass song, we might write a country love song. That song What Becomes of You and Me that Marcy and I sing, you know, that's our Louvin Brothers song right there. And you know, I had started the song Me Too before Tom and I worked on it together, but I couldn't really finish it. And we've done a few songs where one or the other of us started something and it took the two of us to finish it. And Me Too is really a straightforward moron. It's a bluegrass song that supports women in the Me Too movement. And on the one hand, there are some bluegrass people who are just going to nix the whole project because of that, and there's some bluegrass people who are going to say, finally, somebody's singing the truth in this genre. Now, you know, so this is all over the map, and the title, All New, when we wrote that song, I said to Tom immediately, oh, that's the title of our album. We didn't know it, but we just wrote the title song. All the songs are new. It's a fresh, positive song about love. And we do sometimes sit down and say, let's write something that makes us feel good. You know, sometimes we write something, you know, the song that you mentioned, and maybe we'll play it now, To the Ones Who Gave It All. There's no way to go through this time in our lives without feeling the depth of the challenges in the emotions of living through this pandemic, of watching people die, of watching your friends become ill. Some of our friends have passed away from COVID. Some have passed away from other things, but COVID made it worse. And in the meantime, because we're storytellers and because we're trying to be present and pay attention, we were clearly thinking of all of these first responders and nurses and doctors who've been to hell, and some of them couldn't even come back. They did give it all. And when you think about that song, it easily applies to the pandemic, but it also applies to so many other things. And we're still standing, but it is clearly on the shoulders of people who have done work that we cannot do. And so our job is to do the work we can do. We can write songs, we can honor them, we can try to bring people together with community songs. And then, you know, we can let it all out and goof off or whatever it may be to try and also bring community that way.
We're going to play that tune. Kathy was just kind of did a nice, really nice introduction to The Ones Who Gave It All. I cut you off when we were talking about Grandpa Dance to Charleston. We got talking about styles. That's actually a song that you could dance to Charleston. I don't know what you call that type of music, but you could actually dance to that.
Well, that was the intention. Once we wrote it, you know, Marcy and I clearly, and Marcy was very integral in all of the arranging of these songs, but we clearly heard how the banjo ukulele could turn this into the Charleston, and I can certainly do that with the guitar, and Tom had a blast. Tom just had so much fun. He got to play this character in the song, and you know, we're willing and able and embrace the concept of writing these songs like To the Ones Who Gave It All, but then we have to balance that with some levity. We want to balance that with embracing all parts of life. And you know, I think for a lot of people it kind of brings back memories of their own grandpas, of a moment in time when there was this really fun thing that happened with them and a grandparent.
Let's before I get sidetracked again, because I love talking to Kathy Fink. And by the way, this is the first time I've met Kathy many times, but we're actually talking, seeing each other, which is how I would like to do it all the time. I like to see the people I'm talking to because I can pick up some nuance that I can't always hear. So I'm looking at Kathy as we're talking about All New. And what we're going to play now is she gave a nice introduction to The Ones Who Gave It All. Let's play that now, and I'll come back and talk to Kathy Fink some more. You're listening to Unreal Bluegrass. This is a great song. Go ahead. The listeners just heard, would I be wrong to call that an a cappella tune?
No, that's completely correct. It's an a cappella tune, and it's meant to be easy for people to join in on, because I think everyone I know, regardless of their beliefs about so many things, but everyone I know wants to appreciate and pay their respects to the ones who gave it all, be it from 9/11, be it from the pandemic, be it from so many of the tragedies that have gone on, where we see other people doing the work of trying to, you know, clean up the mess, trying to make things right, trying to help people survive. And we absolutely just have to thank them.
there are, I said at the beginning, there are 27 cuts. One is 18 seconds long, and that's himself. There are, you wrote a song on the second album, second CD, as Pete's Shoulders, and I have to believe you're talking about Pete Seeger because I know of your connection, but I could be wrong on that, but I believe that's what the point you're trying to make.
Oh, absolutely. This was in homage to Pete Seeger, as Tom put it, on whose shoulders we stand. And even in the bluegrass world, I want to say that bluegrass owes a huge debt to Pete Seeger. I mean, his banjo playing changed the world. His songwriting changed the world. His attitude changed the world. But his banjo playing changed the world. And so many great bluegrass banjo players got started with Pete Seeger, How to Play the Five-String Banjo book. And it had chapters on so many different styles of banjo playing. One of those styles was bluegrass. One of those styles was, you know, really, you know, Earl Scruggs roles and things along those lines. And Pete was unquestionably one of the most versatile banjo players I ever heard. If you haven't listened to his album, The Goofing Off Suite, where he plays stuff like Blue Skies, which has been, you know, transcribed and played by Tony Trischka, and he plays all kinds of interesting, different music applied to the five-string banjo. You know, I owe a debt to Pete in banjo playing, and Tom, of course, looked up to Pete as a great folk singer, a great songwriter, a great community leader, and then, you know, Pete was the kind of guy who would look at a young Tom Paxton, hear a brand new song like Ramblin' Boy, which nobody had barely heard, and 2 weeks later, perform it with the Weavers at Carnegie Hall on their live album. And time and again, Pete listened to unheard of, unknown people and loved their songs, sang those songs, helped those people get somewhere with their music just by virtue of listening, paying attention, recognizing, and singing those songs. And, you know, if Pete Seeger sang one of your songs, there was a good chance that if you called up a folk club, you were getting the gig. And other people might record it as well.
Yeah, well, many have. And as far as Pete Seeger, you mentioned his ability to play Blue Skies. I did a program with the Kronos Quartet a while ago. They did an album about Pete Seeger and on the way that the Kronos people do that. So we talked about that. And I did more research into Pete's, all the details about Pete that I didn't really know, and Tony Trischka was the one who said, you should play Blue Skies. And so you go back and you find that album and you realize, yes, he was a great singer and a great message, but he was a really phenomenal musician, and the things he was doing on that album, they're still really modern sounds. If you go back and try to break down what he was doing, it was not an easy thing to do.
Well, not only that, but, you know, Pete was the first person to really bring steel drum music over to the mainland here. He wrote the first book in the U.S. on how to make and play a steel drum. He was an ethnomusicologist. In fact, I'll tell you a great story about Pete. He was doing a kids and family concert with us about 30 years ago, and he walked into our house, and Marcy had her double tenor steel drums set up because we were using them on some recording project. Pete walked in, put down his banjo, went immediately over to the steel drums, started playing, and smiled and looked at Marcy and said, "It's the only instrument I could ever play while I'm skating down the Hudson River." And Marcy said, "How, could you please explain that?" He said, well, you put a string through both sides of the holes here where you've got the stands for the steel drums, and you just put it around your neck, and you put on your ice skates, and you go down the Hudson River playing your steel drum." And, you know, you can't make up stories like that.
Kathy, thanks for sharing that. Every time I talk to anybody about Pete, I learn things that I never knew because there's so many bits out there. I'm talking to Kathy Fink about the album with Tom Paxton and Marcy Marks are all over it. She's told you some of the musicians. You mentioned already the Pearl of Arizona. There are three songs, I think, right in a row, you have Stagecoach Mary, the Pearl of Arizona, and Eleanor Dumont, which are very specific characters. And I think they're probably historically based. Is that a fair statement?
They're absolutely historically based, especially if you can believe anything that you read on the internet. So we had already written The Pearl of Arizona based on that whim that I had of let's go find a female outlaw of the West that we can write about. And I'm a firm believer that there's magic in the number three. And so I said to Tom, we're going to do a trilogy. I'm going to find us two more characters. And so the next one that I found was Stagecoach Mary, who was the first African-American woman to deliver mail by stagecoach in the West. And she was a character, and a well-loved character, but, you know, also drinking, driving, crazy, not afraid of work, big, and became a very beloved character in Cascade, Montana. So we wrote a song about her, and that's a very bluesy kind of song. That's the one that Alex Lacamont plays harmonica on. And Marcy is showing off her prowess on the percussive washboard. And then the third one was this woman, Eleanor Dumont. And she was kind of a card shark and a gambler and made tons and tons of money, but ended up losing it all, ended up really in terribly bad shape and eventually taking her own life. But in a way where she both lived and died on her own terms. And, you know, these three characters kind of all showed a different side of the craziness of the Wild West and some of the power that women had out there.
I did not know about your three thing, but I knew there were three in a row, so now I know that you're – I kind of like trilogies. I like threes. That's combinations of the people, by the people, for the people. Was one that I think of all the time is a pattern of speech. So, good. You also write a song on here, which I – anybody that plays an instrument, I'm a very pedestrian banjo player, but I think your song guitar or Guild – D25, I think is the name of it, if I can remember. There's an attachment between a musician and an instrument where that instrument really does become as much a person as it can and as much a friend. I think the song is about this instrument's been through so much with me, and it actually becomes a friend almost in the way that another living person would be. And I like that song because I've had that attachment to musical instruments before, and I thought, yeah, okay, there you go.
Well, there's an interesting story behind that song, and again, I don't feel like I could have written it completely by myself, but my friend Jake Blunt, who everybody in the bluegrass and old-time music world knows, terrific both musician and historian of great African-American roots in bluegrass and old-time music. Jake needed a guitar, and he called me up, and he's like, you know, what cheap guitar should I get? I said, don't spend your money on a cheap guitar. I'm going to loan you my guitar to work with, and then, you know, I'll get it back sometime. And the guitar I had in mind was my 1971 Guild D25. It's an all-mahogany guitar that my parents bought me for my high school graduation gift. And it was $125, which was a boatload of money at the time. And I played it pretty much for the first 5 years of my career and for the several years before I really started that career between high school and turning 20 and playing music full-time for a living. And so there were a lot of threads in that song. Before I passed the guitar on to Jake, I wrote a 6-page story about all of my adventures with that guitar. I've been doing a lot of short story writing for the last 30 years, and during the pandemic, I had time to dig more and more into that side of the art that I love. And I wanted to do a song. I knew it had to be in open G tuning, which was one of the tunings that Joni Mitchell used, because I cut my teeth on guitar on the music that was on the radio back then. And there wasn't a Joni Mitchell song from the 1970s that I did not learn and that I did not learn the guitar part to. And in fact, I feel like it greatly influenced my banjo playing, because when I got my first banjo and it's in open G tuning, I'm like, yeah, I know everything about the left hand. That's not what I need to learn. So I decided that the song would be on that guitar in open G tuning, and had a blast reconnecting with the guitar as a result of that. So Tom and I did all the lyrics, and then I picked up the guitar, put it in that tuning, and, you know, 20 minutes later, it was a done deal. And I have loaned that guitar out to so many people through the years. Adam Hurt had that guitar for a while. Some kids' music friends of mine had that guitar for a while. Jake had it for a while. It's not my main touring guitar, but I'd be more than happy to tour with it again. Usually I tour with smaller guitars right now because the dreadnought size is a little harder on my right arm, which gets a lot of tendonitis. But it was a total joy to work that song up on there and to record with it and to sort of give it its permanence.
I love that. My first... This is not about me, but I'll say this. My first banjo was a K banjo, which I've learned. So many people started out on K banjos. Well, I didn't know anything about them. I didn't know how to tune it, but I know this much. The string, the action was about 3/4 of an inch off of the fretboard, which I didn't know that was a problem. So I'm struggling to do, and I wore that thing out. That's what I went through, all the Scruggs book on that K banjo. And it was, like you said, like $125 for this guitar. That's probably about what this cost. And I foolishly traded it to get a better banjo, not like a huge leap, but just something better that was, now I understood. Every day, I wish I had that old K banjo back. Not that I would play it, and it sounds selfish to say that, but I want that horribly pet playing, didn't even have a shell in it. It just, you know, just that's the way they made them then. But I still wish, so I connected with that, not in the way that you did, that you did with this Guild guitar, but I have that connection with instruments still. And that one, I wish I hadn't traded it. I didn't get that much for it, but I still wish I had it. But at the time, it meant a lot to trade in, to upgrade a little bit, you know?
I felt the same way about my first guitar, which was a Harmony, a small Harmony guitar. And I guess, you know, just something about being young. I didn't really think there was any value to holding onto it when I now had a guitar, so I should just sell it. And I was in a music store a couple years ago, and I saw a guitar of that exact model, and I was really tempted. I didn't buy it, but I was really tempted. And the only reason to purchase it would have been nostalgia, and, you know, I've got a D25.
But still, you have that little spot in your heart that you wish you had. I do every once in a while. It's greedy, but I get very sentimental about instruments that I first learned to play on. That was the first one I had for a long, long time. And you know, but so anyway, that song struck me. I'm glad you had a chance to try that. Hey, by the way, the album All New, which is a 2-CD, I want to make sure we talk about when it's available, where it's available. So let's do that now.
All right. All New is going to be available for release on July the 29th. There are 4 singles coming out in advance. 2 of them have already been released. One of them is Pete Shoulders, which we released as a fundraiser for the Folk Alliance's Village Fund, which has been helping support musicians who need a little extra money to get through the month here and there. And the second single is a bluegrass song called Since You. It's Tom and my first bluegrass duet. And really a fun, happy love song, even though we're not supposed to write those. We do. And there's going to be 2 more singles, including the title song. And then July 29th is the release. And people can pre-order the album by going to Bandcamp or just go to KathyMarcy.com. And you'll see a picture of the album cover for All New right on the homepage. Click on that. It'll take you to Bandcamp and pre-order the album there. And, folks, it's a wild ride to release a CD, no less a double CD with 28 songs on it in these times. So we hope that you'll support the musicians and the music. I'm proud that Tom and I were able to pay all the musicians really decently, and that's part of one of the things that Marcy and I have been very diligent about throughout the pandemic has been creating work for other musicians through some of the online festivals that we've been running. Brad Kolodner and I have collaborated on lots of old-time banjo festivals. And so if you want to support the music, and not only with our album All New, but with everybody's albums, we know you can go listen to them for free, but the musicians don't make anything back on that. And they did spend something, not just in their time and their love and their effort, but they did spend actual money making these albums, and they don't get any actual money back when you just listen for free. So you can either go buy an album or you can send a donation to musicians. This isn't about me and Tom and Marcy. This is just about the philosophy of supporting the music so that it can keep on going. There's a lot of musicians still struggling, and I'm extremely lucky, and Tom's extremely lucky, that we've kept our heads above water, but it's not easy for everybody. So buy their music. Pick some musician that you love, go to their catalog, buy one of everything, or just send them some money via PayPal or however they're accepting money, or join their Patreon. Do something that supports the music so they stay here and keep on making that music for you.
So, well, you put that about as well as it can be put, and I want you to introduce one more song. We've talked about the album. We're not going to hit all of them, but we talked about the feel of the album with Tom Paxton, All New, and Marcy. Marcy, of course, is all over it, as she always is. Playing, I don't know there's an instrument that Marcy can't play, but she contributes so many of those talents. But I want you to introduce then Friends Like These, which I like. I like all the songs, but I kind of like this as maybe a way to end it. You introduce that. I'll say goodbye to you, and we'll drop that in for the audience.
Sure. Friends Like These is an opportunity to remember how important our friends are. It's really quite that simple. You know, we sat in a room playing music with friends like Kimber, like Alex, like Tom and Kathy and Marcy. And I think during the pandemic, you know, even though we were able to flat screen visit our friends, it's not the same as when we get together 3D people. And when we get to do that, I just want to emphasize how much I appreciate it. You know, this has been such a big time of reflection for all of us. We've had a little time for reflection instead of just keep on doing. And, you know, friends are about the most important thing out there. And so that's really all this song is about, saying thanks to our friends.
Kathy Fink, I like to think that you're a friend of mine, and I would value the right to say that about you. But this song, I think, says everything that you've just said about really when you get down to it, there's a lot of stuff you can move around. There's a lot of objects you can have. Friends are probably going to pull you through just about everything. If it's going to be possible, it's going to be because of a friend.
Hey, Steve, it's such a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm so appreciative not only of your friendship, but of your radio show, of your support of the bluegrass, old-time, and folk communities, and we're really lucky to have you spreading this music around.
Well, you're very kind. This will be, I'll say goodbye to Kathy Fink, and we'll play for the audience listening on Unreal Bluegrass, Friends Like These, which is another cut from this great new album that she's described, All New with Tom Paxton and Marcy Marcher. Thank you, Kathy. We'll run into each other again somewhere, hopefully.
I look forward to it.
All right. I'll see you. Thanks so much.